Hello and welcome to The Two Dyspraxics. I'm Barbara Neal.
And I'm Matthew Munson.
Today we are going to talk about walking, and this is various aspects of walking. And the reason this came about actually is because I mentioned in a previous podcast that I walk in an unusual way.
Yes. And ever since then, I've been desperate to know, but Barbara will not tell me what this unusual way is until on the podcast. So I'm finding this information out as you listeners are finding this out.
Right. When I say walking in an unusual way, I don't mean because I'm dyspraxic and therefore I walk in a weird way, because we know a little bit about that, don't we, Matthew?
Indeed.
It has been demonstrated in the past.
Don't even go there.
And I think when I was a teenager, I still haven't got to the point. I will explain in a bit, actually, but I'm building up to it. I'm building up to the explanation. But when I was a teenager, I didn't know I was dyspraxic at that point, but we do have to put a lot of effort into walking, you know, just walking, not doing anything spectacular or anything like that, just walking. And so I really felt so self-conscious that I thought people would be looking at me because I walk in a very odd way and things like that.
Okay.
And probably that wasn't the case anyway, because I think I can get away with it, actually, you know, my dyspraxic walk. I don't think I attract too much attention with the way I walk.
No,
hopefully,
I mean,
not anyway.
I think you walk, Barbara. I know you're dyspraxic, but you walk perfectly normally. I hate the word normally, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Thank you for that. I do appreciate it, because it does feel a bit odd. I have to say that we have a security camera installed. I won't go into the reason for that, because that's very long, drawn out, and frankly quite boring. But
oh God!
But we have a security camera, so I see myself every time I go outside the house, and I do think, well, I can see my dyspraxic walk. I didn't realise it looked the way it does.
Oh, interesting.
So so I'm slightly more aware of it, but I don't care, because you know I've got to this age without caring too much about what other people think.
So actually, just to cut in on that point, that's interesting, just to kind of mirror that, because I'm sure we've all got a sort of unusual walk, but our own unique walks, I should say. But I remember when I had my diagnosis, I was assessed for my diagnosis by an occupational therapist. Oh God, this was, I can't remember.
It was a few years ago, wasn't it?
Whenever it was. One thing the occupational therapist said to me, she was a lovely lady, overall, and she said, when I was doing the balancing and kind of the walking things that she was asking me to do, she said, you always put your hands, Matthew, she says, in your front pockets for walking and your back pockets if you're trying to balance and lean. I said, no, I don't.
Interesting.
And she said, yes, you do. She said, I've just watched you do it. You don't realise you're doing it. And it turns out I do. I realised, it's taken me years to realise that I'm really uncomfortable walking just with my arms loose by my side. You know, obviously they work as counterbalance. I feel really clunky with that. So I always put my hands in my pockets if I'm walking. If I have to stand upright, if I bumped into you in the street and was talking to you, I put my hands in my back pockets to balance myself, almost like to centre myself while I was talking to you.
That's interesting.
And I now make a conscious effort to try not to do it, to see if I can manage it. And it really makes me ache. If I don't do it, I really have to kind of, and it, without my hands in my pockets to walk, I really struggle.
It just goes to show how we can come up with these coping strategies without even realising what we're doing or why we're doing it.
Agreed.
And you know, I have one which does involve walking, actually, which is walking up or down steps or stairs. Mm. And for years, for so long, I've counted the steps. And I thought it was just a weird kind of superstition of mine. But then when I discovered I'm dyspraxic, I realised, actually, no, it's a coping strategy, because it doesn't matter. I don't have to start at one and count in proper sequence. It's just it's a way of focusing my attention on the climbing or descending stairs.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, you're saying that, that's brought back a really strong memory of you and me, actually. I can't remember where we were. I think we were up your neck of the woods somewhere, and we were walking somewhere, and there was a flight of stairs going down. I remember this really distinctly, because we laughed about it afterwards, that there were no handrails on either side. Both of us sort of looked at each other and went,
Yes.
We had to go down the stairs. We were talking to, along the flat. We were talking, went down the stairs. Both of us were silent. Got to the bottom of the stairs. Both of us started talking again. There's nothing had happened.
Exactly.
And it was only about half up the street. I suddenly, both of us sort of said, did you realise what we just did back there? And we both erupted into laughter because we realised what we'd done.
But exactly.
We were both concentrating just on not going up bum over head on the stairs. That we both did it in perfect unison, in perfect sequence.
Exactly. And there was another occasion as well when I think it might have been your neck of the woods. I think it was actually coming out of the Turner Gallery.
Yeah.
And we were talking, and you selfishly grabbed the only handrail.
Oh my God, I remember that.
I am joking, obviously, because there was nothing selfish about it. It's just what you do. And if I'd been that side, I would have grabbed the handrail. But I had to stop talking, and then you realised kind of halfway down, didn't you?
I think I was saying something to you. I think I stopped. Because I think I'd ask you something, I'll stop. Because I was holding onto the handrail, I felt slightly more confident. And I was like, Bob has not answered my question. I get it now.
Yeah, no handrail, that's why she's not talking.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
So, and on the subject of, you know, you've reminded me, honestly, I'm going off at I still haven't told
Sorry,
you.
Sorry, yeah.
But I will. But... on the subject of having an assessment during the course of my assessment and doing something that you don't realise you're doing, I was asked to do something. I can't remember what it was now, but it involved using my right hand doing something. And so the occupational therapist said to me, have you noticed what your left hand is doing? And so, oh, yeah, my left hand was kind of mirroring the action that my right hand was taking. I was blissfully unaware of it.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things that, and so that's something I'm very aware of now. And so if I'm doing something, I call it the claw, because it kind of goes into, you know, it contracts into a kind of claw type shape. So I have to consciously put my hand, if I put my hand flat on a surface or something like that, then I can't do that. It doesn't happen. So.
No.
Yeah, that's one of these little peculiarities that I was blissfully unaware of until my assessment.
How weird.
Yeah, it is rather, isn't it? This dyspraxia thing. It's weird, but it's fascinating.
Oh, it is. I think. It is.
Very fascinating.
Anyway, but you're still...
Yes, my unusual way of walking. You may have noticed that we've been in lockdown for a while.
I thought there was a part.
Have you noticed that?
Yeah.
Right, well, our lockdown was tightened when son number two, Jim, got COVID. He had COVID, so I was in the habit. Yeah, so I was in the habit of going out for a walk every day.
Mm.
And so I've got to keep my walking going. I can't not walk. But I couldn't leave the house, obviously, because Jim had COVID. We had COVID in the house. Mm. And so I decided... that rather than stop walking, and walking around our garden is probably not the easiest or the best way of doing it. So I started pacing the kitchen. And,
interesting.
I think it sounds a tad bizarre, frankly, but I'm still doing it. Computery things, you know. Yes, but it's not a Fitbit, but it does have, it's an Apple Watch actually, but it has counts my steps, among other things. So I want to keep up my step counting and my daily exercise. So it's quite handy, actually, pacing the kitchen. It's so much easier and quicker and more straightforward than going out for a walk, because it means I can do 5 minutes here and there, you know, and add to it. So during the course of a day, I do at least an hour's brisk walking up and down in the kitchen.
Mm.
That's my unusual way of walking. But it's handy, and I've stuck to it.
But again, aren't you finding that this whole lockdown, I mean, yeah, don't be wrong, the lockdown has been awful, and I don't think there's anyone who's enjoyed every single moment of it, but I think a lot of people probably have found ways of coping, and that's not to minimise the mental health issues and everything that people are going through, but we've had to find creative ways of staying fit, staying in touch, anything, everything. And actually, I think for us, you know, why can't we pace the kitchen if that's what it's going to do to keep us fit? It's the same as going out on a long walk. If we're forbidden from going out because of COVID, well, then let's just walk in a smaller space. Why not?
Yeah. And it works. You know, I've got, it's very convenient actually, because it's five paces from one end of the kitchen to the other. So I just swivel round. The only thing is, actually, I have to say that I've had some knee pain, and I discovered why it is, because if I don't swivel right round to face the opposite direction properly, I'm straining my knee. You know, so I set off to go in the opposite direction without turning my knee properly. So I've become aware of that too. So that's something I have to be really careful of. And it just really works. And I found that if I'm watching something on TV, if it's on one of the channels with ad breaks, so I can write ad break starts. So I'll just go and do a couple of minutes or so, just walking in the kitchen and adding to my daily total. So
I think that's
very convenient, works a treat.
I think, you know, because in the, you know, in the past, we've always seen people have gone to jogging. People have always jogged. But actually, that's not the only way to get fit and healthy again. You know, we probably all become unhealthier during the lockdown because we haven't had to get out as much. So actually, you know, hopefully people's minds are opening to going, okay, how can I stay fit? Is it yoga? Is it walking? Is it jogging? Something low impact works for a lot of people. You know, walking is comparatively low impact, far low impact than running could ever be. You know, that's not to say running and jogging isn't good. It is for some people. I have no interest in jogging at all. I like walking. I like walking as a form of exercise. You know,
And something you used to do, which is why I thought walking would be an interesting subject, because not just from a dyspraxic point of view, but from a more sort of generalised point of view, that something you used was your marathon.
I did marathon walking. Yeah, I started doing it in about 2009, 2010, maybe something like that. A friend of mine had heard of a walking marathon up in London, starting at Battersea Power Station, going around all around London. And I originally thought I'll do a half marathon. I thought, yeah, I'll try a half. My friends who did it with me said, now go for the full. I said, be ambitious. And it took us about 11 hours or something to do, because, you know, you can never be fully ready for doing it the first time. It's just not feasible. But we did it, and I ate about 2 days afterwards, and I slept for a week, and it was overnight. It was a night marathon as well. But do you know what? I got a bug for it. I think I've done about 14 of them so far. I think one year I did four in a summer. I think which is incredible. My last one. This is my one claim to fame. My last one. Which was 2019. So that was the year Brian came home to me. So he'd come home, was living with me full time from the March, and this was in the September. And I still did it, and I came first.
Well,
I genuinely wasn't doing them to. There is no winner in that sense. Yeah, you're doing it trade mine for charity. But there was one point I just thought, nobody's around me, and I had to come first. I mean, obviously in the interim, you know, last year's marathon was cancelled because of COVID. And, you know, I haven't had the opportunity to exercise and prepare for marathon in the way that I would need to. You know, I'm massively out of shape compared to how I used to be now. you know, so I could do it again, but I would need a lot of practice to do it. That ties into our previous podcast, that fatigue. I think I'd have to be aware of my own energy levels when I was doing it.
Yeah.
I would want to do them again, I think, as a challenge to me to see how, you know, 40-year-old, 45-year-old Matthew could do them compared to 30-year-old Matthew. You know, starting from, because I'd have to start literally from nothing again, like I did in my very first marathon. So I think it'd be interesting to see how I coped with that, how much longer it would take me to prepare for one now that I'm, you know, 10, 15 years older than I was that first time around. You know, I mean, inevitably I could do it, but I would need to prepare more, I think. I think when you do that kind of walk and you're with a group of people, the adrenaline goes. You get a real energy boost from it. You know, I don't mind admitting, when I came over the finish line in the last one, it was the only one I've ever done by myself. I'd always done it with a friend, but she couldn't make it on that one. She'd moved halfway across the country, so she couldn't come up for that one. And it's the only one I've done by myself. And I walked over the finish line and I thought, I've done this for me and for my friend. I'm not ashamed to admit it. Oh. I burst into tears. Yeah. Half past two, 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm practically alone in this giant tent with a group of volunteers who are kind of cheering, giving out medals. I've never met before and I'll never see him again. And there's just me, this sobbing mess, just going, I've done it. Yeah, but it is a sense of achievement.
I totally understand that. It must have been so amazing to do that. And I take my hat off to you. I really do, because the only kind of anything like a marathon walk, I've done two actually, charity walks. When going back a long, long time now, when I was at, wait for it, youth club. So that's how long ago it was. And took part in how far was that? Can't remember how far it was. I think it was about 10 miles or something. And actually, it was Maidstone to Ashford. Wow. How far is that?
That's a long way.
So, yeah, it is quite a long way. It must have been, it's more than 10 miles, isn't it?
I'd say that.
Anyway, I'm not sure, but it was Maidstone to Ashford. Ashford was where we ended up eventually. But I took part in that, and there were some who dropped out along the way, and some got there way before we did. There was another girl and me, and we were the last ones to come in. So by the time we got there, I was practically dead on my feet. And they'd had food and drink and stuff, and most of it was gone.
Oh, no.
We got there. You know, so we didn't exactly have a hero's welcome because we were the last two to come in. But that nearly killed me. And then we did a walk, which I think was about 20 miles years later, quite a few years later. That was in the 70s because, I won't say what the organisation was because I've just remembered that there's a reason why I can't take it for one of our future podcasts. But we had this charity walk, which was about 20 miles, and I was as fresh as a daisy then, didn't have a problem. You know, it was so weird because it nearly killed me that first time when I was about 13 or 14. And then when I was in my 20s, no problem at all. So it's just really odd. I think there are lots of factors that come into play.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so weather, mood, preparation or not.
Well, just funny, I remember when I used to do marathons, there was a lady who was there every year. And occasionally, before you started, there was like a warm-up and you'd have someone up on the stage doing, you know, some stretches and stuff that you could do before you started. And sometimes they'd invite up this lady up onto the stage who was a walker in the marathon every year. And she... Last time she was there, the last one I did, and she was in her 90s. And I can't remember if she was doing the full or the half marathon that year, but whichever one she was doing, she was either walking 13 miles or 26 miles, you know.
Wow, that's amazing.
And you know, I've always wished, I'd never got to do it, but I've always wished I could see her at the end and just sort of go up to her and say, tell me how the hell you're doing it, you know. You know, our times must never have aligned or whatever, but it'd be lovely to have seen her.
Oh, definitely.
Incredible.
That's incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
And like I can tell you a little tale of something my dad did years ago in the 60s. There was the Kent Messenger, which is our local newspaper, obviously. They had a 50-mile walk challenge. And my dad never walked anywhere. He used to take the car just to go to the local shops, you know, which was within easy walking distance. So he never walked anywhere. So there was lots of ribbing that went on. And I remember the house really stunk beforehand because he used to rub this stuff called Russian tallow on his feet to prevent blisters. And it really stunk, but it worked, apparently. He didn't get blisters. And he completed it. He completed the 50-mile walk. But when he came back, there was the reception committee was my two nans. One, obviously, my dad's mum, one, my mum's mum, because my grandparents live next door to each other, so it was really handy. And my mum, my aunt, who's my dad's sister, and my mum was telling him off because he looked so ill when he finished it. My aunt was crying because he looked so ill. His mum, she was laughing. No, my aunt was laughing. That's it. It was my nan who was crying because he looked so ill. My aunt was laughing because he looked so ill. And the only one who actually said congratulations was his mum.
Oh, my goodness.
My brother was distraught because Dad had a Mars bar and couldn't finish it while he was walking. So half a Mars bar somewhere. So he was distraught because of that. And he actually did. There were two other occasions when they had the Kent Messenger 50-mile walk and Dad took part. And he went with two of my cousins. And my two cousins, I don't think either of them ever completed it. But the third time, Dad gave up before he got to the end. But the second time, he did it as well. So, yeah, he was just determined. There was no way he would not have completed
it. I think, yeah, especially if there's a certain element of, and there's nothing wrong with pride, if there's a certain element of pride involved, you know, you think you're going to be kind of made fun of, I told you so's moment.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that was a massive motivation.
Yeah, I bet it was.
Dad, I can tell you. And actually, I've just thought of something else, a marathon walk that's coming up, and that's the London to Brighton Challenge. And a very good friend of ours who lives opposite, Ellen, she sadly lost her 9-year-old daughter very suddenly a few days before Christmas before last. So Ellen and I think it's 18 of them all together are taking this London to Brighton challenge on the 29th of May, and they're raising money for cardiac risk in the young, which is what Jamie Lee, she had a heart condition that just hadn't come to light. So it was very sudden, bless her. And so they've already raised several thousand pounds thanks to their Just Giving page. And I just want to give them a massive heads up. So if anyone would like to donate, please consider going to the team is called Forever Nine. It's hashtag Forever Nine. And they're on Facebook. They have a Just Giving page. So please consider going there and making a donation because they're doing a fantastic job in Jamie Lee's memory. I must say, though, that among those taking part in it, I hasten to add, I'm not doing it because I did consider doing the first leg because it's possible. It starts in Richmond on the 29th of May, and there are various stations along the way. So you don't have to do the whole London to Brighton, which is probably just as well for some people, I'm sure. I did consider maybe just tackling the first leg of the journey, and as Mark, my partner, pointed out, he said, right, so you have to get there. So you may well be exhausted before you start, you know, with getting there early in the morning. And then you have to do that walk. So I said, do you know, I think you're right. I don't think that's for me. So I'm hoping to support you in a different way.
Yeah,
we'll find a way to support it. But among the people who are taking part, Tom, who is Ellen's brother, he lives opposite us as well. He lives next door to Ellen, actually. He's taking part in it. And I think the world of Tom, he's an absolute sweetheart because he's a mechanic and he always gets my car in motion for me. So all I have to do is just say, well, Tom, my car's MOT is due on such and such a date. So he just comes over, collects it, takes it in, gets it done. Oh, brilliant. Bless him. So he's taking part in it, but he's not doing any training. And this is London.
No, that's not good.
So, no, it's not good. Ellen's doing loads of training. She's walking sort of 10, 12, 13 miles a day, you know, so she's actually really getting stamina.
Because, you know, I can remember when I've done the marathons, I can remember so many people overhearing conversations all around me of people saying, I haven't practiced. Yes, I can remember some people, I remember one year, I saw one woman getting ready to start. She was in a different group to me, and she had flip-flops on. And I promise you, she had flip-flops on. And I almost couldn't stop myself. I went up to her and I said, have you got another pair of trainers in your bag? So I'd got a spare pair of trainers that I always used to carry in case, God forbid, something happened. Because I was thinking, I'll give them my trainers. I can't bear this to happen. And she looked at me, she went, oh, yeah, I'm wearing these flip-flops. So I went, are you doing the half or the full? She went, I'm doing the full marathon, 26 miles.
Flip-flops. My goodness.
I was trying to sort of hide my surprise. I don't think I was hiding it that well. And she got really kind of shirty with me. I think I probably upset her a bit because I was sort of, you know, showing my surprise. And I actually said to her, look, I've got a pair of trainers here. Take these trainers. I don't need your trainers. I'm fine. I don't know. I'd be surprised.
Oh, my word.
It always used to depress me. Eventually, the marathon start point moved from Battersea Power Station to Southwark Park, kind of on the other side of sort of the south side of the river. About 3 miles in, you'd end up kind of walking along the south bank. There's by Tower Bridge. You know, you've got that big museum navy ship that's on the River Thames. Golden Hind. Thank you.
Yes. I went to a party on board that once a few years ago.
You get to use your places, bloody. Okay. I've never been on that.
Oh, I could have used that for a round of How Could I Lie to You?
I've got you over there.
Blown it.
No,
yeah, because the thing is, Matthew, it would be a really stupid thing to tell you something.
It would be what kind of moron does that? What kind of idiot would do that? Seriously, that would be me. About 3 miles in, we were around the Golden Hind area. But, so this is raising money for cancer research charity. And so about 3 miles in, only quote unquote 3 miles in, so about the first 45 minutes, hour, something like that. And I got there and the amount of people who were sat down rubbing their feet, having a cigarette on a walk for cancer research. I thought, I can't stop you, but dear. You want to walk for cancer research, at least see the irony in this, please.
Oh,
and the amount of people who are going, oh my feet, we've been walking for less than an hour at that point. An hour. And they were when they got their shoes off I was just like, oh, please.
Oh dear, yeah. It's incredible, isn't it? But, I think, have we exhausted?
I think we have. I feel exhausted thinking about the subject of walking.
I do now. I never used to, but I do now. But there we are. So, on that happy footsore note, I think we'll say goodbye until next time. So it's
goodbye from her. Bye.
Bye.